Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be. You're tuned into the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, David Schrader. Thank you for joining me. Got an interesting lineup of guests scheduled with you this evening. Steph Young will be joining me in a few moments to talk about her work and research. Something in the Woods is Taking People. That's the name of her new booklet. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. Roy Bainton will join me. Unexplained phenomena, astonishing anomalies, unknown dimensions, panic, and paranoia. We'll also open up phone lines so you can call in with questions for our guests in each hour. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. We've got a great show lined up for you. Let's cut away. We'll come back with Something in the Woods is Taking People right after this. Steph Young is my guest for the next 2 hours. She's an independent researcher addicted to researching all paranormal, supernatural, esoteric, and enigmatic mysteries. She has a BA in business. She's taught English at language colleges. And each book she writes seems to lead her to further questions and searches for answers as the mysteries inevitably deepen and develop into even more complex riddles in the spectrum of the unknown. Her new book, Something in the Woods is Taking People, that's what caught my attention. And as I mentioned on last night's show, when we talked about 100 Bigfoot nights and a woman who believes that her family is being tormented by cryptids, I'm not a big fan of the outdoors, Steph. So these kind of books are the ones that set me on edge, especially when you get the idea that I grew up going to Y Camp and hanging out at my grandparents' large 40-acre property in Alabama, and I always had the willies walking around the woods feeling like I was being watched. And now you start seeing books like this come out, and I'm really starting to get that feeling back again. What drove you to start researching this specific phenomena?
Hi, Dave. Initially, I was researching and writing a book about time travel, and I came across dimensions and vortexes, and that kind of led me into it. Initially, I found this place in Romania called Bisegi, which is in the Carpathian Mountains. And in 2003, an investigator found that allegedly there was an underground tunnel, which the US military had been flying over and seen it with geometric satellite imagery. And they had tried to get into it. And when they got inside, they saw a synthetic oil-like tunnel, but it was man-made. And allegedly, they found a hall of records, a holographic hall of records, detailing origins of civilization, which was different to what we think. And skeletons, and it was all hushed up, and, you know, apparently it was a bit like the Stargate they found in Iraq. Anyway, so I thought that's a bit interesting, and I was looking into the area, and there's a reputation there for people going missing, and the elders speak about people disappearing in fogs and turning up in another place in the mountain, or being thrown, and electronic devices don't work, and there's a euphoric kind of feeling, and there's no tiredness, no hunger when they walk in the mountains. And then prior to that, in 1980, a Romanian journal was talking about two brothers, and they were climbing up the mountain, and one went ahead of the other and had got to a ledge, and he'd seen this really archaic writing, and he'd gone to have a look at it, and suddenly the brother said he just vanished, just disappeared. And at first the police thought, well, it was his brother that did it, but no, it wasn't, and they sealed that area off as well. And so I thought, well, okay, so there's something to do with time travel technology here. Well, this is something to do with the geometric structure of the land itself. And I found another place in Tibet called Mount Kailash, a professor, with the pronunciation, and he had uncovered a similar thing where soldiers had tried to get into this cave, and they'd actually died on impact of trying to get in. So I thought, well, maybe there's something to do with the structures, you know, and people disappearing. And so I was looking into those, trying to find other places, and I found a place called Makawasi Stone Forest in Lima in Peru, which is said to be a dimensional doorway or a portal. And again, there's rumors of people disappearing, or they go into altered states. And people feel a strange kind of energy there, maybe an electromagnetic energy. And a geophysicist from Boston had gone there, Dr. Robert Soch, and he'd said, well, I think there's a kind of congruence of ley lines there. But again, there was rumors of disappearances and what they called maybe Celtic abductions, which is like fairy line, you know, ley lines. And he was on the summit, and he said suddenly everything went really quiet, and he heard a humming sound, but there was no wind, there was no insects, no animals, and he saw a flash of light and two hooded figures appeared. So I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe something paranormal is going on. And so that's what kind of really led me into looking into forests and woods and seeing what was going on.
Well, I know David Paulides has done quite a bit of work with his Missing 411 books, talking about the startling amount of people that have gone missing from national forests and just gone without a trace.
Yeah,
and it's interesting to know this is taking place in other parts of the world as well.
It is. It's worldwide. It really is. I mean, it's quite interesting. When I was looking into it, on the UK news over here, there was a missing case of a fireman called Mike Herdman, and it was actually when I was writing it. And I thought that was a bit strange. I mean, it's really tragic what happens, but it's happening all over the world. And so it really led me on a path of trying to discover what could be going on. There's not one answer, but there are several possibilities. And one thing kind of links into another as well. So,
well, Steph, let me ask you this. As you said, there's many possibilities. In these wooded areas, we know that in many of these wooded areas around the United States and around the world, they're heavily populated with different wildlife and animals that do attack. And, you know, there's been news stories where families have been out with their small children and they turn around and the kid is gone, only to find him, you know, 50 yards up the road being gnawed on by a wolf or by a mountain lion. And they can move that quickly and that stealthy. And a lot of times they'll drag them off into the woods or someplace and devour them before anybody even notices what's going on, which would leave very little evidence behind in these cases, or they take them to den areas. When you look at the amount of people that are missing, how many would you say are probably attributed more to animal inhabitants as opposed to strange phenomena?
I'd say not that many. I'm not a native to the National Forest over there, obviously, but the ones I've been looking at, Makawasi doesn't have those predators. There's a place in Northern Ireland that I found, because I was looking initially to dimensions. So in Ballyboley Forest in Northern Ireland, I mean, interestingly, it's 666 hectares, which is just a coincidence, I think. But it's, you know, it's in terms of size, it's so much smaller. And Ireland, you know, we don't have any predators at all. We don't even have poisonous snakes. And a man went missing there in 2006 called Ian Black, and he'd left his office. And people had noticed that he'd gone missing in the evening. They reported it to the police, and the police found his car right by the edge of the forest. And it's got a rumour and a reputation for people hating going in there, even though it's not that big. But again, it's quite an ancient druid site, and there's stones that are embedded into the land there. And there's rumours about people going missing. In an ancient text, it actually talks about people not coming back from there. So whether it's superstition or not, I don't know, but he'd gone in there and then the police went in and found his body, but he died of natural causes. I mean, he was only 42, didn't really have any medical problems. There's no predators in that wood. And how do you die in Ireland in the summer? I mean, it's mild compared to, it's not Arizona, you know, it's not baking hot and it's not cold. So it's a bit kind of strange. And when people have been in there, there was a couple that were walking through the woods, and they heard this screaming, and they looked for the source of it, and they couldn't find anybody. But when they looked at the trees, it seemed to be that they were smeared in blood, which was, you know, really strange, and they just ran off. But they saw these cloaked, hooded figures behind them. So again, I was thinking, well, okay, well, maybe it's a dimension, maybe it's paranormal, or maybe it's stones. But there's other places across the world as well where these natural predators just don't exist. I mean, I was looking initially, as I say, on the stone bit, and there's a place in Freetown State in Massachusetts, and it's called Assanet Ledge. And I don't know if you've heard about granite as such being a conductor, because it's kind of crystal based, isn't it?
So right. Granite, limestone, and quartz are very rich, right?
Yeah, like it's used in computers and TV and things, but it's also used in spellcasting, so it holds intention. Now, whether it, you know, if you want to do a positive spell, it's good intention, but it may hold bad intention from years and years ago. And this particular ledge, people have thrown themselves off, which sounds really strange, but they say that they get this sudden urge. So they get to the ledge and there's a sudden urge, a compulsion to kind of throw yourself off. And 12 people that I've read about have done that down, you know, into the quarry below. And you think, well, that's a bit strange. And there's a place in Australia as well called Babinda Boulders, which is in far north Queensland. And there's 18 deaths. People have just, they've drowned in the water below. But they've kind of jumped in and drowned, which sounds, you know, a bit strange. And I found a place in rural Scotland, and this is really weird. It's a place called Overton Bridge, which is up in Dumbarton in Scotland. And it's a granite bridge. And 50 dogs have thrown themselves off the bridge and died, which is unheard of, you know. And a doctor went over it, a psychological animal behaviourist went over it and saw the strange reaction of the dogs. You know, so all of it at first, to me, was leading to it being maybe, possibly, a granite thing. But then, again in Scotland, there's a place, the Cairngorms, in the Highlands. So again, it's high mountains. And there's an entity as such that's called the Grey Man. And a professor, Norman Colley, back in 1925, he was at the AGM of the climbing club. And he started talking about what has happened to him. And he said that he was alone and he was descending from the summit. And suddenly he started hearing these noises in the loose rock behind him. And every few steps he took, he would hear footsteps crunching behind him, but really heavy ones, and they sounded much bigger than him. And so he just got into a blind panic and started running down, and he hid in the trees down at the bottom and looked around, but he just couldn't see anything there. And after the meeting, several of the climbers there, they came up to him, and they were a bit kind of embarrassed, but they said, you know, we've had the same kind of sensation there, but not only that, we've had this real urge that we want to throw ourselves off these dangerous crevices, you know, an urge to jump off. And I think he was, again, this is really strange. And there's a lady called Wendy Wood, who is the Scottish National Party founder, which is a political group up there. So she's, you know, she's a level-headed politician. And she was recalling how she was hiking alone there. And she was at the lower part, so in the forested area, and she heard a voice. And she thought, maybe it's a climber that's fallen and he needs some help. So she's looking around to try and find it. But when she was talking about it afterwards, she said, you know, the weird thing was that the voice was so close to me. It was like it was standing right next to me. And she was really scared and sort of hurried off. But again, she said, I could hear these footsteps behind me, and I thought they were mine, but the echo wasn't really matching mine. You know, then I'm thinking, well, okay, is there something invisible, or what was she hearing? And I'd previous to this book, I was writing a book about demons, and I remember the story back in 1944, and this was in London, in Ealing, and a man called Andrew Green, he'd gone to, with his father, he'd gone to see an empty house. His father was a rehousing officer, and the boy was going up the stairs, and it was about a two-floor house. And as he was going up the stairs, he felt like he'd been sort of pushed from behind. And he carried on, and when he got to the top, he saw that there was a balcony there. So he made his way out to the balcony, and as he was standing there, he heard this voice, and the voice said to him, just jump down, it's a couple of inches, you'll be fine. And luckily, his dad was behind him and grabbed him back. And when he told his dad later on, his dad was quite concerned, and he had a friend who was in the British police. So he said to his friend, well, do you know anything about the house? Is there anything strange about it? And his father found out that 17 people, again, well, no, actually 20 it was this time, had thrown themselves off this tower and committed suicide. So, you know, I'm thinking, this is really weird. And when I was looking for more cases of people going missing or ending up dead in, you know, mysterious circumstances, as I say, the case of Mr. Herdman was on the UK TV here, but there were other cases that I was looking into. And in Arizona in 95...
Well, let me ask you one thing, Steph, if I can. When you talk about these locations where people seem to be doing this, we know, unfortunately, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge, a lot of the famous bridges, people will go there to end their lives. And there's so many that it take place, that they actually have cameras on the bridges now to keep an eye on it. When there are locations like you've mentioned, has there been any scientific study done regarding the idea that could it be something to do with the geographic location? Could it be some kind of energy emitting that may be causing kind of a brain fog or a scramble that may help these people make this decision to jump?
Not that I know of. I haven't found one. There is something that I came across, actually at the end of the book I'd come across it, and it's something called subliminal distraction theory. And this, I don't know if you've heard of it, I hadn't, but it's something that initially was discovered in the 60s when they first started office work. You know, people used to work with cubicles. So if you're sitting at an office and you've got the side of you and the front of you kind of blocked off with a cubicle.
Right.
Yeah. And engineers have somehow discovered that people were having breakdowns in offices. And so that's why they've constructed these cubicles. And the theory works that it's a bit similar to when people apparently play computer games all the time. So imagine you're sitting playing computer games, but you're behind you and to the side of you. Maybe you're in a busy house or you're somewhere busy in an office, and people are constantly walking past you. And the brain works by detecting threats. So you constantly register these threats, but because you know it's not a threat, you don't do anything about it. So it's a bit like your brain is constantly ignoring potential threats. Well, the theory goes that it gets to the point where you've had these supposed threats going on for so long and you've ignored them that it makes your brain go into overdrive and you have a kind of breakdown. And that's why you act really bizarrely. You might kill yourself. You might take your clothes off. Really strange things. And I was reading this scientific study about it. And I mean, I was going to get onto this bit later, but you know, have you heard of the smiley face killers, that theory?
Right, yes, here in the United States, yeah, along the Mississippi River.
Yeah, all the young college boys. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's something in that. And that's how I found the theory, because this man who was doing a scientific study was relating it and pointing out that some of these people had been playing computer games, had detected these threats, and it had caused them to have a breakdown. That's something that's possibly to do with it. But as for the actual structure of the stones, I mean, going back to Makawasi, the doctor there, Dr. Sosh, had said about the strange energy. I mean, he's a geophysicist. I guess he'd kind of done more research, obviously, than I about it. But I don't know.
Well, you would think if these people pick up on a strange energy, it should have some measurable quantitative measure to it, so you should be able to pick up on it using some piece of equipment at this point. So like that bridge where the dogs jump off and kill themselves and people can't understand why, you know, what brings them to this to commit suicide at this place. I know there's the forest in Japan where people go to hang themselves constantly. There are these sites that just seem to draw death to them. And it does make you wonder what is it about that specific location that is so enticing. Now, in some cases, when it's a bridge, we know that there is most likely, you know, I mean, if people are going to end their life, they know that that's going to be a quick and efficient way to do it. But when you look at, you know, some of these, the animals having that kind of lemming mentality where they just run up and then jump off these bridges, it doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. But people are a totally different bird altogether. I mean, you know, people do silly things. That's why with the smiley face killer you brought up, we've done a show on that on my radio show, and we've talked about it through the years. I just have a hard time believing that there's something nefarious going on. I think it's something very sad and tragic, but in a lot of the cases, it's teenage boys or early 20s young men that are in good shape, good health, and otherwise should have no reason, but they drown. But the fact that's, you know, people want to kind of skirt over is the fact most of them happen around bars and late at night when people are drinking and maybe feeling despondent and lonely and sad. And, you know, I mean, that seems like a moment for suicide.
We've got lots of universities here. We've got lots. I mean, I went to university by the suicide. Mm-hmm. Nobody drowned. Nobody did. And what I've noticed about that is there, I don't know, you know, all of this could be conspiracy theory, but there is a little bit that points to an occult kind of thing with this smiley face killers. I mean, there's a professor that's been investigating it, and he said that one body was found drained of blood. Some of the bodies have been found placed in water in kind of a ritual pose. Whether that's coincidence, whether people are reading too much into it, I'm not sure. But there is something to me that suggests it could be linked to some kind of alchemy ritual.
Well, let's take a break, Steph. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Something in the woods is taking people. We'll cover more of that on Coast to Coast AM. A little later on in this evening's program, I'll be joined by Roy Bainton. He has a book called The Mammoth Book of Unexplained Phenomena, Astonishing Anomalies, Unknown Dimensions, Panic, and Paranoia. That's what we'll be talking about in the last 2 hours of tonight's show. A little bit later on in this segment, we'll be opening up phone lines if you have questions for our guests or your own strange incidents that may have taken place out in the woods. We'd love to hear from you and love to hear your story and version of what might be going on. Something in the woods is taking people. Steph Young is my guest for the next hour and a half. If you've missed any part of tonight's show, don't worry. It's so easy to find it. You just go over to coasttocoastam.com and become a Coast to Coast insider for 15 cents a day. 15 cents a day. That's all. You can become an insider. You get active archives going back 5 years. You get access to our live chats with the guests that you hear on the show and with the different hosts from Coast to Coast AM. And while you're over there, check out Beyond Belief with George Norrie, George's TV show. Right now, 30 days of it free. That's right, 30 days. You can check it out or go to beyondbelief.com for more information. When we return, we'll get some more insight to what might be going on in the woods. What is it that's taking people? Are we dealing with creatures, aliens, dimensional portals? We'll find out more from our guest right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. And joining me, we're talking about a really kind of interesting topic. Steph Young has done quite a bit of research on the strange and the supernatural. Something in the Woods is Taking People is the book that we're discussing right now. Let's delve into some of the different ideas. As we've said, there's a myriad of different possibilities. We kind of dismissed, especially out in your area and in some of the locations you were, of the wild animal theory, because that you just don't have the same predators there that we might have in the national parks throughout the United States. So let's talk about some of the other possibilities. And we've also discussed maybe ley lines, connection of granite, quartz, limestone, things like that, that may be creating an electromagnetic force that may be distracting or compelling people to do this. What other objects, what other ideas do you have that might be causing these disappearances?
Well, when I was thinking about the gray man in the Cairngorms,
right.
This invisible thing, I started looking into that a bit more. And there's an explorer, James Allen Rennie, back in 1924, and he was in the wilderness in northern Canada, and he was going over a frozen lake with his companion, and these invisible tracks started coming towards him. So it was splashing up the water, and all these tracks were coming closer and closer, but he couldn't see anything. And it impacted against him and then just carried on making the tracks. And it was something invisible, but no idea, you know, what it was. And I was reading this journal back in Italy, and five women were collecting wood out in the forest. And allegedly, a doctor had written in this scientific journal about this woman had just fallen to the ground and with the most horrific injuries. So she'd had her intestines were hanging out, her clothes were torn, her hip was torn from her body. There was flesh bitten out of it, but you couldn't see any flesh in, you know, on the ground. It was a really bizarre situation. And there was another case, it was in the Manila papers, and there's photographs of it where a woman was saying that she was being bitten, she was in prison, and she was being bitten by something invisible, and nobody else could see it. And but they photographed all the you know, all the pictures, and she said it was these invisible entities, you know, one was dark, he had a voice like it was in a train tunnel, so it was a really deep voice, and another little creature with dark eyes. And they just couldn't understand it. But I was looking more into cases maybe in the woods, and there's a guy who's a bit of a hunting aficionado called Russ Chastain, And he described one of his first ever hunting trips that he'd gone on with his dad. And they'd set up in separate trees. And he saw this bush moving. And then he saw another one behind him, but he couldn't see anything. And then he said he heard this most horrific scream, but to him it was, you know, between an animal and something ethereal. But the even weirder thing was that his dad didn't hear it at all, but he was terrified. And I'm thinking, well, you know, do these invisible things exist?
Well, if you look at some of the sightings of things like Bigfoot, it may make it more understanding as to why they're there one minute and gone the next. Are they able to cloak some way once they realize that they've been seen, that they can do something to either blend into their atmosphere or, you know, create an invisibility, you know, layer around them?
Yeah, funnily enough, there's a guy called Scott Carpenter, and he runs the Bigfoot Field Journal. And he's made this claim that he roams the woods with a video camera on his back, so he's recording as he goes along. And when he reviewed it, he said that he'd captured it on the film, and it was supposed to be a Bigfoot, but it was dark green. It was squatted down, and it was kind of in the foliage, so it was dark green at the time. But when he was looking at the camera, he didn't see it, but looking back, he saw it, and it changed into its dark brown kind of color afterwards. So maybe, and there's a guy that, well, there's a place called Clapham Woods in Sussex in England, and that was a place where back in the 80s, four people were found in the woods dead, and Charles Walker actually wrote a book about it. He was an investigator, and he'd gone and had a look around, and he said that when they were looking for the bodies, they couldn't find them. They searched all the areas, but when they went back, you know, after three or four searches, they found the bodies afterwards as if they'd been placed back there. And there's a guy called Michael Ian Black, and he says that he's captured images. He puts them on his website of cloaked mantis-type figures that are you can't see with a naked eye, but you can see it if you look through the pictures. So again, he's saying there are these kind of invisible creatures, and he's saying, you know, this is what's responsible for abductions because you can't see them.
Steph, can I ask you, when you hear about the reports of these cloaked figures, is there an estimation of height for most of them, or do they vary?
Well, these ones, he said, were over 6 foot in length.
Okay.
Maybe. And there's another woman. There's a doctor called Dr. Bruce Maccabee. And he used to work at the Naval Research Center, specializing in optics. And there was a friend of his, and she'd gone out on her own at the start of the deer season and set up her stand in the tree. And it was about 5-ish in the afternoon, and she was a bit bored, so she was texting on her phone, just waiting for, you know, spotting something. And she sent a text saying, it's gone incredibly quiet all of a sudden, this is really weird. And then she was looking, and there was trees around her, but there was a kind of field in front. And she said she saw this brown shimmering kind of effect, almost like she was looking through some kind of chiffon type material. And she took her glasses off, thinking, oh, it's something in my eye, and put them back on, but it was still there. And actually her nephew was playing, I think it was football practice, about a mile or so away, and independently, he had come back home, and he said, "Yeah, I saw this. I kept thinking there was something behind me. I could feel it, but I couldn't really see it." And he saw strange lights in the sky as well. So, you know, there are some kind of reports about invisible type entities. And I remember reading about. Have you heard of atmospheric beings or sky beasts? As they're called.
No, I have not.
Yeah. Well, back in the 50s, there was a Navy veteran, and he was a bit of a UFO investigator. And he spent 20 years studying these things. And they're invisible to the naked eye, allegedly, but you can see them with infrared camera. And they're absolutely huge, intelligent life forces. They are... You can't see them as such, But when you look through with the infrared, you're supposed to be able to see them. And they're sort of morphic. They're almost like cloud formations. So they're morphic, but you can almost see a sort of shimmering in them. And what he said, and Ivor Sanderson said it as well, and Dr. Carl Schuker, who's a cryptozoologist, and he said that these things increase their density, so they become more visible when they're swooping down. And he said, I blame the livestock disappearances and, you know, disappearing people on this phenomenon. And there was another photographer, Michael White, New Zealand man, and he'd noticed this cloud. He was seeing this cloud in front of him, and it didn't move for about 30 minutes. And so he's taking these pictures of it, and then it suddenly vanished. And when he looked at the pictures, he was saying, well, there's a kind of a rippling, morphic kind of shape inside it. It looks like it's fibrous, you know. And actually, the Air Force said in 1949, they were saying, well, there is a possibility that these kind of animals do exist, because they make more sense than some of the sightings of UFOs. So they were saying it's a possibility. And
what intrigues me so much about that, Steph, if you don't mind me mentioning, when and I briefly mentioned this last night on the show, and I was inundated with emails asking what it was that I saw. When I went to the Ysetti Ranch out in Trout Lake, Washington, James Gilliland, who's been a guest on Coast to Coast quite a bit in the past, had basically thrown out a challenge. He said, if you come out here on a clear night, you have a 90 to 95% chance of seeing things in the sky over our property. And I went out and witnessed weird lights in the sky throughout the night, many things I couldn't understand, and moving at strange angles and stopping and then taking off again. But what really shook my whole paradigm was at one point I went out in the field and I turned around, and instead of looking towards the volcano that everybody else was watching, I turned and looked behind everybody. And out of the sky came this, and I don't know how else to explain it. It fluttered like a stingray, the way it fluttered through the sky. And it was glowing interior. It was like a blue glow. And it fluttered through the sky and went behind this big set of pine trees and then vanished behind the other set. It was so bizarre to see. It looked like a bad 1980s music video effect. And I thought, is he beaming some kind of laser light on a screen between those trees? So I went running through, and I'm throwing rocks and cones and anything I could between those trees to hear if I could hear a boom, any kind of noise. What I'll do during the break, I will send, I've got a friend of mine who's an artist, did a recreation. I took an actual photograph of that tree line, and he recreated exactly what I saw that night. It glows blue, but it didn't put off light. It wasn't like it lit up the sky. It looked like it was interior lighting for this thing. And when I asked James about it, very calmly, he said, that's an interdimensional craft. It's half living, half machine, and that's how it goes between the dimensions. And
oh my goodness.
I had just seen this thing, and I thought, my God, how high are you that you think that this is the truth? But what other what other answer could there possibly be? I don't know. But I'll try to send the picture over to the Coast to Coast website during the top of the hour break, so you guys can, our listeners can go take a look at the artist rendition of what I'm describing here as well. But you talking about these creatures that would come down and become more visible the lower they got, I also, while we were out there using the he had field glasses, the night vision field glasses. And at one point when I was looking at the sky, I could see a huge triangle hanging out over the top of his property, but I could not see it with the naked eye. It was only through the field glasses that were night vision, and they were like fourth generation. Yes, and you could see this huge triangle. I couldn't understand it either. Why could I see it through the goggles and not with the eye? But it was truly amazing.
Oh, my goodness. Well, there you go. I mean, it does sound, you know, that's the thing, until you see something, you just think that sounds ridiculous, but, you know, then you see something. I mean, I haven't seen it, but you right. see something and you think, crikey, maybe there is. I mean, the reason I was looking into these ones was because, you know, all about these missing people, there's so many cases where it's almost like they've been lifted up because they've disappeared. And
right.
They can't be found when people search for them. And how can you not find them with tracker dogs? I mean, they're I would say 99%, you know, accurate, aren't they? So how do they disappear? They don't leave any tracks. They don't leave any scent. Where have they gone? To me, maybe they've been lifted. And that's kind of what I was thinking. You know, like there was a guy, August Rieger, who was in Ecuador with his family, and they were staying in a hotel, and they all decided to go for a little hike, which is probably 3 kilometres, and it circles the hotel, and underneath that you can see the village. And he and his brother ran on ahead from his parents to go to a lookout point, and one brother went ahead of the other a bit faster and turned around, and he was gone. And I mean, his dad was saying, you know, how is this possible? If he'd have fallen, we'd have heard him. There was no broken branches, there was no blood, there was no scream or shout, there was no tracks. The soldiers came in and they rappelled down the ravine. There was nothing to indicate where he'd gone. And if he'd have got lost, his dad said, you couldn't get lost. You could see the hotel from the whole route, and you could see the village, so you'd go down or up, you know, to find your bearings. But it was almost like he disappeared into thin air. And there were, you know, there's a lot of other cases like that. There was a guy called Michael Letray, and he was in Canada. He was doing a 5K circuit, a marathon circuit of Seward's Mount. He'd done loads of marathons before, so there were other people on the track, obviously, and he disappeared into thin air. They got the dogs in immediately, and they did thermal imaging and aerial search, and hundreds of volunteers looking at all the crevices for over 10 days, and they just couldn't find him. And you think, well, how is that possible? You know, where's he gone? Because he's not on the ground anymore. So I suppose that's kind of what made me think something's lifting them up, you know, if it's possible.
I stay with me on this. As somebody who's also intrigued by the idea of time travel, has there been any research done? Have you ever taken a look at stuff? Okay, in this area, this person went missing. Has there ever been any research done looking back in time through news archives of people that may have just shown up out of nowhere that don't know who they are, don't know where they came from, but they matched the description of people that have gone missing from this timeline?
Well, when I was doing the time travel book, evidence was scant, let's say, of that happening. It was very, very thin on the ground. Not really, no. I mean, the only thing I can think of is there's a mountain in Zimbabwe called Mount Inyingana, and this has got a really weird reputation. It's not a time travel thing, but strangely, several of the government officials have gone into that. I don't know why they go in there, but they've gone into the mountains on hikes, and at least three of them at separate times have gone in there and have become lost and disoriented, and then turned up maybe a week, 2 weeks later, with no idea where they've been, no recollection, no memories, and in perfectly good health. And what they say there, that the locals and the elders and such say this is down to the djinn, or just the mountain spirits. But one thing was odd in that one of the government officials was with two other friends, and when they were being searched for, they could see the search party, but the search party couldn't see them. And so they were shouting and waving and saying, you know, we're over here, but the search party couldn't see them. So it took them another day or so to find them.
So it's almost like they were stepped into an alternate version or a parallel universe of this one, where they could still see through the portal, see the people there, but they couldn't re-enter into the same timeline almost.
Yeah, maybe. It is. It's very odd. Yeah.
Well, and again, a lot of this is speculation and hypothesis, yeah. But when we talk about the idea of ghosts and hauntings, I've often wondered if that is more of what we're dealing with, not necessarily dead people, but people that are in parallel universes or perhaps even just timelines that are touching in those moments, and we're able to hear and see things that coexist in the same exact location throughout the past and the future and the present. So I know a lot of this is weird, and probably everybody thinks I'm firing up a bong talking about it, but you know, that's what, you know, when you look at these, you can't just eliminate any aspect. When you have people and things that just go missing and there's no explanation at all for how that happens, it is mind-boggling.
It's a bit like all the fairy stories, which again you might think is ludicrous, but you know, fairies are supposed to have this ability of using glamour and a power of illusion, so it can abduct you. I mean, there's a story about a boy in the Isle of Man, which is an island off England,
Well, why don't you tell that when we come back? We've got to go to the break so we can come back. We'll get into that story about the boy from the Isle of Man. Our guest this evening is Steph Young. Something in the woods is taking people. And then what happened to the people that have shown back up? We'll find out about that. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.